This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
But Backstreet Boys as a group was definitely better than NSYNC.
And Brock Rom.
Backstreet's Back is like an all-time banger.
As we prepare to crawl back out of this pandemic hole and things begin to reopen, we talk with Garrett about his likes and dislikes during the pandemic, challenges that have been overcome, and what's here to stay as we get back to some semblance of normalcy.
You guys ready? NSYNC. LFO, 98 Degrees, O-Town.
Remember O-Town? LFO, I forgot about LFO.
Summer Girls.
You can't mention all that without New Kids on the Block, too. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they were the original.
Well, I don't know how to segue this, but let's bop our way into this conversation.
Handsome reference, y'all.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Guys, what are we going to talk about today?
I honestly kind of wanted to talk to you, Garrett, about producing during a pandemic. And I know we've touched on it. I know we've touched on it here and there. But I kind of want to hear from beginning to end what an episode of The Journey Football or Basketball looks like for you.
Sure.
Right. And what are you going to keep from this? And what are you going to, you know, change back to the old way of doing things? And like, because I think everybody's got efficiencies from working this way. But I think, obviously, I'm sure you'd say there's inefficiencies too, right?
One of the things that I think last time we talked about this, it was all, you know, what does the journey normally look like? And that was back in last summer when it was more like, here's what it normally looks like. And I have no idea what it's going to look like this year. And now having gone through this pandemic year, I think, you know, we've talked to a lot of the people on the live production side who have kind of walked us through some of the ways that production has changed for them. Yeah, I mean, it really changed quite a bit for us too, on the feature side. And I think that, to be honest, I think that 95% of the time watching the show, you probably wouldn't be able to tell that we're in the middle of a pandemic. And I was really proud of that. Like, I think we did a fantastic job both through, you know, the individuals on the shows. I mean, the producers and the editors and all that stuff in making it look like it normally did, but also just the company really invested in resources as far as, you know, allowing us to work from home, allowing us to be remote and up, you know, have footage in the cloud and, you know, all those kind of things that allowed us to not need to go into the office to make a pretty dang good show. And so, yeah, I mean, in the pandemic, one of the things that I think was hardest for me was just trying to establish relationships. I always say that as a, you know, producer, and especially on the feature side, like, relationships are king. Like, I need to be able to go in and just get to know someone and make them feel comfortable in, you know, the short amount of time I have before we sit down for an interview if I want to get my best stuff. And I think with athletes, a lot of, and coaches on campus, a lot of times that's just in the minute or two while they get mic'd up and the, you know, our camera operators finish their checks and stuff. And so that didn't change a lot. I think it's just tougher to do over Zoom. But then with family, a lot of times, you know, you're going into the house an hour before an interview and, you know, you're crew's setting up and I'm over here talking to them about the story. I'm over here trying to figure out, you know, what kind of things they respond to, what they don't. You know, I'm going through old photos of them, of their kid, if I'm talking to a parent or a high school coach, or what. I'm just finding ways to, during that hour, to get to know them a little bit. And, you know, with this now, it's like we pop in on Zoom about the same. It's like a minute before we go and I have to build that relationship. So I think that's the toughest part that we missed, is just, there were interviews that went fine over Zoom, but I knew that if I was in that same room with them, I would have been able to get, you know, five times better stuff out of them. And it's just because, like, your nonverbals are huge. I think that's something that I learned as an interviewer.
I've noticed that on here, too. You're good at the nonverbals.
Yeah, I mean,
I
really try, and I think, you know, if you watched a Zoom recording of me interviewing, normally on a normal Zoom, a lot of people sit back, they're, you know, you're getting from their chest to the top of their head. And when I'm doing an interview, I'm like here, I'm like 6 inches from my Zoom camera, because I know that the computer's probably 6 feet away from them. I know that, you know, they're not going to be able to see or interpret my nonverbals unless I'm giant on their screen. And so I am like, my face is filling the whole Zoom screen when I do an interview, and I'm nodding like vigorously. I'm like over laughing, you know, on mute. Like I really played up my nonverbals this year on my Zoom interviews, which it took me until about week 3 to kind of figure that out. Week 3 of our football show to figure out that I really needed to just be big on their screen because I'm far away, and like overdo the nonverbal, just because it makes people feel like, oh yeah, okay, they're still listening. I know they're not here, but like they understand what I'm saying. And a lot of times would get people to maybe go on a little more than they would have otherwise. And so that, all that to say, like, they're just not being in person, I think was the most difficult thing this year for me for interviews. Everything else, like, I feel like we were able to edit, you know, our edit changed. Whereas normally we're sitting in person with our editor, you know, we're sitting in the office, so we have access to all of our server full of, you know, archive footage and, you know, melts and all that stuff that we can just, you know, drag into a project if we need it, and we have instant access to it. Whereas this year we had to be a lot more thoughtful, which I think will be good for me long term. I think it made me a better producer, having to think ahead, whereas, you know, we had to go to our media manager and have him transcode some of the stuff, because, you know, those files are huge. We're not going to be able to drag, you know, 500 gigabyte files, you know, melts onto our, you know, over our home networks real easily, just on a whim. You know, that's stuff that you're having to do the night before. And, you know, we had workarounds where we could remote in and transcode on our work computers, where we had access to all that footage, and then drag it up to the, you know, a server that we had access to remote from home. And once they were transcoded, you know, they're 10 gigabyte files rather than 500. But it's just all those things, it made us think ahead a lot more on, well, you know, what do we need for this project? What do we need for, you know, it was just harder to pivot, I would say, in the middle of an edit. And it was kind of a pain in the butt at times. But we also, just because we weren't all having to go into the office, like, if we didn't finish up a piece and the editors, you know, we're working with another producer that next day, like, you know, they could just take 10 minutes to finish up mine the next day rather than, you know, me having to go into the office to be with them to finish that up for 15, 20 minutes next day. It was just a lot of things where the challenges weren't as challenging as I thought they would be. And I feel like a lot of that was just not, you know, obviously not being in person, but it just, it made you think ahead, and it made you think in a different way that I think long-term will be good for me as a producer. I don't know. I feel like I rambled for a long time there, but I think that's the gist of it. That's the synopsis of what I've learned.
What I think you kind of got to there, and we talk about it on this podcast a lot, is you had really technical hurdles to an extent, right? To get stuff recorded and get interviews done, right?
Yeah.
But it probably made you focus more on your storytelling, whereas you could, like you said, you could maybe kind of not be as thoughtful on the front end. Not saying that you weren't thoughtful on your front end when you were in person, right? But you always knew you're going to have that interaction before a shoot, right? And you knew you could pull something or other, or maybe your story's 80% of the way there. You know, the extra 20% is going to come from, like you said, those relationships you build on site. Did you come into it and now kind of figured out, okay, I need to have my story maybe 90-95% there, and then maybe we discover something, and like you said, you pivot, or did you really see that of like, I just really need to be more focused on, this is my story, and this is how we're going to approach this versus coming into a live interview scenario?
I would say on the interview side, it was probably a little tighter than it normally is, as far as, you know, having honed in what I wanted to get out of that interview. Whereas sometimes I just go in and am willing to explore a little bit, but you just kind of learned quickly that it was tougher to explore because you just weren't able to have that same kind of relationship. You weren't able to have that same kind of, you know, back and forth as you normally do when you're in person. So I didn't feel like as often I was able to just get something that I was like, oh, wow, like, tell me more about that, which I really like, you know, obviously following up on things that surprise you is like one of the best ways to get a great story. And it was just much tougher to do that over Zoom. And so I do think that I had a little more, I was more honed in ahead of time because I felt like it was less likely that I would get some little gem out of it, you know, and I was always ready for it and still prepared and, you know, able to pivot if it went that way. I just felt like maybe the interviewees were less likely to do that, just because it felt a little more, you know, static doing it over Zoom and a little more 2D. And I think, like anyone, you know, people have had Zoom burnout by that time, where they've just been looking at screens for so long already. By the time we got to, you know, October, when the Big Ten football season started, that they're just like, okay, we're going to do another one of these. And, you know, I was just kind of one face on a screen rather than, you know, someone who is there with them. Cause like even the press conferences, you think back to it and it's like all the press conferences are done over Zoom. So they're just single faces popping up on a screen. Whereas before that was a room full of people asking them questions. So when I came in and did a one-on-one interview, like I was unique, you know, I was having a different conversation with them than they were having in other situations. Whereas, you know, all of a sudden I became just another face on a screen in the same way that a press conference was, in the same way that all those things were. So I think that I did come in a little more honed in on my feature, but I think where it really had to be honed in was on the edit side, because normally when you're sitting with your editor in person, it's a real collaborative process. It's real, like, you know, and I've kind of talked before, I'll have my A roll down and then, you know, my B roll will be, you know, either kind of roughly in place, or, you know, I'll at least know what I want there, what I'm looking for. Like, hey, I need a dunk sot, and, you know, I've pulled some selects of, you know, good sots from a dunk or something like that. And, you know, hey, let's pick from one of those and see what works and what feels right. But this year, doing it the way we did it remotely, it was basically I hand off my project. You know, I get as far as I can or want on a rough cut, and it was just straight handed off to an editor. And, you know, I hand it off to him. We check in at the start of our day at 9 a.m. or whatever it is. And then, you know, but at 3 p.m. they come back with a first cut, you know, and we maybe talk a little bit over, you know, text or Slack between then. And, you know, I give them notes on my thoughts ahead of time, but it's not that collaborative process. So that's to me where we really had to be more thoughtful and honed in, was on the edit side. Because if we didn't give them the right direction when that first cut came back at 3 p.m. and it was like way off of what our vision was, it was like, oh crap, we're in for a long night. And that didn't happen often, but it just is one of those where you realized quickly that if you weren't given the right direction, like it, because you're not in that same room, you know, just able to see it minute by minute as it's coming together, it's a lot tougher to change.
So I want to go back to something real quick with the, one second, just before we get too far from it, the interview tactic, right? And the Zoom burnout, right? Which I think everybody can relate to.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but I know your wife is also a teacher who has to do a lot of remote Zoom training.
True.
Do you guys share tips and tricks back and forth on like how to keep people engaged on a Zoom call? Like, what's that like? Or do you have tips that you're like, you know, I'm starting off with this to get this person engaged? Like, what are your right family tips and tricks to engaging on a Zoom call for two professional Zoomers?
You know, we haven't really shared a lot of tips and tricks. I think the the fifth grade brain is a little different than the college brain.
You're saying you're smarter than I don't know, maybe not
my college brain.
Not always. Yeah, no, I mean, my college brain was not always smarter than a fifth grader. But it, I don't know that we really, and just with her talking to, you know, 30 people on a class at once, or, you know, 25 or whatever she has, it, it definitely looks a little different. So I don't know that there was a lot of overlap in that, but, you know, I think it's the same idea where you're just trying to, I mean, to your point, you're trying to keep them engaged and you just have to learn what that looks like. It's a lot easier for maybe her, being with the same people every day and kind of slowly over time being able to pick up tips and tricks. Whereas me, I just have to like identify something. And for me, some of it was, I just dug into more research than I had in the past to see if there was some small connection I could find. Like, you know, I personally like really like to bowl, and like, you know, you find a guy where you find an article about him, you know, being a big bowler. Like I can, you know, find a note, like I would probably research off the topic of our story, just broadly about that person a little bit more than I had in the past, just to see like, you know, is there a little nugget that I can take a stab at in that 1 minute I have to just get to know him or make him feel like, you know, okay, this guy isn't some, you know, random face on a screen. He's someone who likes the same things I do. And really, I do think the biggest tip that I gave, and I gave this to anyone that would listen, is like, that screen is going to be 6 feet back from them. That screen is going to be, you know, at least, and you don't know how good the audio quality is going to be. Like, be loud and be, get your face to fill the screen and just over emote, like, you know, big nods when you agree with something, and like big tilts of the head, like, you know, you like giant, like weird open mouth laughs that look insane if you actually see them, but make a lot of sense when you realize that person is 6 feet away from their screen and not having that relationship with you already built in. So those were the big Zoom tips I learned. I don't know that I mean, like, my wife does a great job with her fifth grade class, and that's been one of the like really cool things to come from this when she was working from home, was to like just kind of stand off screen beside her and get to see the way that she interacted with the class and like how insane that is. And God bless teachers, because I think back on what an insane person I was as a fifth grader, and even later on than that probably, but how hard that is. So it was really cool to see the way that I use Zoom versus the way she used Zoom. But I don't know that I would say there is a lot of overlap.
It's almost like the instructions you give actors, right? Like stage actors,
yeah,
who are not on screen movie actors, who are like, you know, when I was in high school doing plays and stuff, they always told you to overact, right? Because the audience is so far away, right? It's like over exaggerate.
Yeah.
Your motions and your facial expressions, that, you know, there's some similar overlap there, it seems.
I am worried that I'm gonna like go back in person and be sitting, you know, 5 feet away from them, 6 feet away from them in person, and I'm just gonna keep doing those things and look like a crazy person and like ruin the relationship. But I think you know, jumping back into real society is gonna be an interesting thing for all of us. We're all gonna carry some weird ticks back into the real world, I think.
The most feedback I ever got when I was starting motion design was exaggerate it more. So I think that applies across the board in different areas too. The one thing I wanted to touch on is you were talking about sharing your vision and making sure that everyone understood the goal up front and what you were trying to achieve. Last time we talked to Emily, she talked about mood boards. I'm just curious, how do you approach sharing your vision and making sure that everybody understands, because you're also dealing with a freelance or an editor that's separate from you producing the piece. It's a little bit more segmented.
I would say, you know, a couple of things. I think that just all of our editors are people that we've worked with now for, I don't think there's any editor that's been on our show less than 3 years. So I think just knowing our editors and them knowing us and the way we like to produce and the kind of feel that we go for, you know, more kind of the default vision. And obviously that changes. Like, there's no one vision for these, but I think just understanding, you know, each other is big. But then I loved her talking about the mood board when we talked to Emily. I thought that was a really cool thing, just to, like, especially when you're dealing with kind of that sports and culture intersection, like, just to try and understand, like, what is the feel of this piece and do it with a mood board. I loved that. And it's something that I kind of, you know, had thought, like, man, I need to really take a look if that's something I can borrow. Cause I thought that was awesome. I think for me, it's funny. It kind of goes back to my wife being a teacher, and I've mentioned this before, on the podcast, but, like, my way of describing things and, like, understanding what I need to get in, what I don't, etc., and explaining that to the editor is, like, I try and explain it to a fifth grader. My wife always tells me, like, pretend you're talking to, like, you know, TJ, like, what would you tell him about this person? Like, what makes them interesting, and how can you dumb it down to a fifth grade level? And that's your starting point. You know, from there you can build on, you know, the flourishes, the more interesting anecdotes that are kind of tangential, those kind of things. But, like, what do you need to get in? If you were describing this to a fifth grader, what does that look like? And so that's kind of always been my brain just goes 100 miles an hour if I let it. And I have trouble, like, really clarifying and just, like, figuring out what the important nuggets are if I don't actually intentionally stop and, like, say, no, okay, this is 7 minutes long and it needs to be 2.5. Like, what do I need to get in and what do I not care gets in? And that's always kind of my trick, is explain it to a fifth grader. And then from there, I kind of work to use that explanation that I have to kind of explain it to my editors. Like, listen, this needs to get in. You know, I think that I probably cut this a little bit fat here. It doesn't all need to go in, but here's why. Like, here's my vision for it and what I thought, you know, it added to the piece. You know, if as you guys are going, there's some flexibility, like, cut that, you know, I left, you know, I'm only 2 minutes, and we probably, like, 2 minutes is fine, but we have room for 2.5. And so, you know, I left some extra sound bites at the end of the board, you know, at the end of my timeline that I loved, but I couldn't find a place for, like, if as we're going along, you guys think that you guys have a vision for it, like, you know, maybe we pull one of those back in. And I think that's kind of one of the things where I really miss being in person, is just that collaborative environment with the editor, whereas I'm having to just kind of tell them that over, you know, a phone call or text, rather than, you know, seeing what they're building as they go, you know, from my base edit. And then, you know, being able to say, like, oh, that's awesome. But, like, what if right after that we pulled in this bite that I had already had? Like, I don't have an opportunity to do that until I see a first cut, which is, you know, hours and hours later. And by that time, sometimes the mood doesn't fit, you know, trying to get some of that stuff. It's just all that to say, like, I think that explaining the vision is harder now, just because it has to be so explained ahead of time. And I just really try and, you know, it's not as collaborative. We can't make those edits in the moment. And so, you know, I try and do that by just starting with a base, like, listen, here's what we have to get in. Like, this is the story. These are the bites that I think get us there. And then, you know, how do we, you know, here's what I think the cover should be. And then just trusting them. And again, I kind of think that goes back to what I started, you know, talking about when I was answering the question, was like, just, we've all known each other for 3+ years. So we kind of know, like, I know that they know where the footage of that guy is, or, like, they might've worked on another piece of his teammate and in going through footage for that guy, like, saw something that maybe I didn't and can pull in. Like, just having that built in trust with our editors is so huge for what we do. It leaves you a little wiggle room when you try and explain it as best you can remotely. And maybe it doesn't come through that I still know it's going to be great because our editors are absolute pros.
And talking about the production process, I'm assuming you don't have a lot of people that join the Zooms to design or direct the lighting or, you know, the visual side of how you're capturing the interview.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a pretty unique thing this year, just because, you know, the campuses didn't want, you know, people outside their bubble coming in. So normally we freelance out, you know, generally one camera guy and a sound guy, and, you know, they just usually have worked together forever. Usually we hire the camera guy and they just hire a sound guy they know. We're not like telling them who to hire a sound guy broadly, but, and they'll just set up this.
Or girl.
Yeah. Apologies. Yeah. Sound operator, camera operator. So they, you know, they'll come in and just set everything up. And normally we're sitting there with them as they do that. And so it's just, you know, hey, do you like this look? What do you think of this? Should I add a light here? You know, do I need to up the backlight, down the backlight, et cetera? But like over Zoom, it's just me. And we were working on campus with the university in-house producers. And so in talking to them, I would just say that the range varies of skill sets, you know, sometimes just because, you know, I've been in house at, you know, all three of us have been in house at universities, and we know what's being asked of those people. Like there's a million things being asked of them normally. And when Big Ten Network comes in and asks them to help out with a shoot, because they're the only people allowed to be around the athletes, like it's one more thing. And so, you know, sometimes you get the senior producer and sometimes you get the entry level producer just because that's the only person available. And they all did a great job. And like I said, I don't think that most people would notice a huge fall off from any other year to this year, on the journey, but it just, you never knew what you were going to walk into as a producer. And so it was just me kind of getting on with them 20, 30 minutes before the call. Like they ideally had already set up everything, and it was, okay, let's hone this in. Let's see if we can, you know, I can use what I've seen from doing these, you know, a ton on site with, you know, high-end freelance people that, you know, maybe I can give you some tips and tricks. And I mean, I always hoped that didn't come off as like pushy or, you know, hey, this isn't good, because they really did a great job. And, you know, we were asking a lot of them on top of what they're already doing in their base job and to help us out. And, you know, I'm hopeful that maybe some of the things I was able to share, like they were able to take away and then use on their own productions, you know. And I don't know, but all that to say, it was not big Zooms. When we did the Zoom interviews, it was just me and the athlete, or me and, you know, the school's computer. And so it was a school shooter and the athlete and or coach and myself. And then sometimes the SID would be standing off to the side as they do. But, you know, it was just one-on-one for the most part. And obviously if we did families and things like that, we were able to send our normal freelance crews out to them. So that was always nice, because it kind of felt normal to an extent.
When it comes down to framing, when you're for storytelling, how do you decide how you're going to frame an interviewee up and how it, you know, helps expand the story or tell the story better?
Yeah, I think that's another thing that changed a lot in this pandemic, where, you know, when I'm not as able to be there and see, you know, see the room, see the area we're working with, or, you know, just not knowing the skill set of, you know, maybe the on-campus producer shooter that I'm working with, like, I probably defaulted a little bit more toward just a pretty straightforward head and shoulders look this year. Just because you know, it's safer, you know what you're going to get. Like it's really hard to mess up head and shoulders. And we tend to be, you know, we probably like to, on our show, tend to throw the person's head a little more toward edge of frame than like rule of thirds that you normally see. We tend to have a little more looking room. And that's just kind of style preference of our show, but
you mean looking off screen?
Where we have them, you know,
ESPN's E60 style.
Yeah, well, that's not quite how we do it.
I'm just kidding.
That's not our style. Yeah, but it's when we're in person, it's a lot more fun because, and I have a colleague who's fantastic at using the environment and using natural light and like, you know, hey, why are we trying to set up a big set? Like, let's use the natural light here available. Let's use one LED to fill and like, let's just roll. Like, oh, we're in this weight room. Like, let's go wide. Let's sit them on a weight bench and, you know, let's do a full body wide shot. And like, you get the sense of like, oh, he's a strength coach because you're seeing him sitting, you know, in the weight room and wide. Like my colleague does a fantastic job of you know, on location interviews, like feeling like the place is a character. And I would say that's something that I'm still trying to grow in. I'm learning. I mean, just from watching him and from going out on site a little bit more, where it's more than just like, you know, a team room like it was in when I was working on campus. Just having that flexibility, like, what if we went wide here? Like, what would it say about that person? Like, if I'm in their home, where can I put them in their home that the background actually tells me something, you know, about them? Like, can I put them in front of the, you know, the fireplace, where up on the fireplace they have, you know, it's a family, they have all their kids' trophies, you know, from back when he played in high school, or, you know, it's just those kind of things and those kind of touches. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, that, you know, like hit you in the face with it. It can be like, okay, this person has like a really, you know, fun, unique personality, and I go into their home and I see this like, you know, thrift shop floral couch that is just like, that absolutely captures them as a person. Like, yeah, rather than sit them on a chair in another room, like, let's sit them on that floral couch. Like, let's make it fun and unique and make it pop. It's just those kind of things that when I normally go into a place, I'm trying to find, and that's a lot tougher to do during the pandemic. I would say that's kind of the big change from a normal year to this last year, was we probably defaulted a lot more to safe interview looks, just because, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from place to place, and you don't know, you know, you're just not there to be able to see what the environment offers you as well. So you're relying a little bit more on the people who are on site and on campus, who maybe just, you know, a lot of people are really good that we work with at having that vision, but, you know, everyone just has a different eye, so maybe they don't see it the same as I would.
Timing too, I'm sure, is huge amount of time to set up and all that kind of stuff that goes into that.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, we're asking, you know, on campus producers and in-house people to help us out that,
right.
I know their job is a ton, you know, and then BTN wants to come in and ask you to do another, you know, 2 hours of work, 3 hours of work on top of that. So I, having been in those people's shoes, I was like endlessly thankful. And, I still very much am, and owe every single one of them a drink next time I'm back in their town.
You have to get Daryl some ice cream though.
Yeah. Yeah. Daryl's getting ice cream next time I'm down in Champaign.
You mentioned earlier the ability to, when you're in people's homes, to see a picture and ask them those questions. And that's obviously a little bit of a change in how you've captured and been able to see and what you see. Just curious what you do to capture some of the contents that you might need from families. It sounds like you sent freelancers to homes, but if you're not able to shoot right in that moment, like shoot any pictures or photos, and you're waiting for families to send you some materials or media that they might have somewhere, I assume that'd be pretty difficult, because it's usually a challenge to you know, have things get followed through when it comes down to,
oh yeah,
receiving that material.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, yeah, probably the next hardest part is a lot of times, you know, you're just in the home and you can, or like you can maybe do some accessy type stuff. Like if the kid goes back to his home and you just go there with them and you get to see him interact, or those kind of things. And the access just was taken away. So a lot of the things that we showed just had to be, you know, a little more static photos or, video that they took on a cell phone of, the kid working out during the pandemic. If we're doing a story about, how did they stay in shape or they did this unique thing during the pandemic? Like, you're just relying on people getting that stuff for you. And that's hard because when I go into the house, one of the first things I like to ask is like, do you have any old photo albums that we can go through? And it's just, even if nothing comes from it, like I look through the photo albums and there's nothing I'm going to use. Just the experience of going through a photo album with a family member is like incredible relationship building. It's hard to, just ask that parent like, okay, what do you have, and maybe they're like, oh yeah, I've got this and this, but I'll send that to you. But they don't know exactly what we're looking for. So it's, they're sending you what they think you want. Even if I tell them like, I want a basketball photo, from him when he was 5 years old, they're sending maybe their favorite shot, but I know one would work better if I was able to go through it. And that's just the thing where I think I had to go back to people a lot this year and say, yeah, this stuff is great. Thank you so much for sending it. Like, do you have any more of this, or does there happen to be anything of them at this point in their life or from this event? And it's just without being able to flip through the options or seeing what they have up on the wall myself, it's just, you had to rely a lot more on, family members, and they were really great. It's just, they don't, they're not producers. They don't know exactly what I want. So trying to get that from them was definitely unique and different. And we still deal with that at times. We don't always go to every parent's house that we need photos from or things like that. So it's not a unique experience, but it was definitely more prevalent this year, I would say.
So what do you think you're going to keep going forward? I think that's probably a good place to start to wrap it up.
Yeah. I think just, being a little bit more prepared, like having all those, just being a little bit more buttoned up and ready for the interviews is probably something that I think will stick. I think that, doing some of the, even like pre-interview calls where before it was just like setting up the interview, hey, are you available to do this day? Then we want to talk about this. And then that's kind of, yeah, okay, great. Well, I'll be in touch. And instead those calls turned into, kind of a pre-interview a lot more often this year. And I definitely want to keep doing that. I mean, just...
What'd you get out of those that made you want to think about keeping them going forward?
Yeah, I think it's just the production, the pre-production work where, like I said, we had to be a little more honed in because we didn't get... and that happens more with families because when we're calling the universities, we're not obviously talking to the athletes and coaches directly. So this is more family-oriented. But just, getting to know what they respond well to and what they don't, getting to know like what really strikes a nerve and what doesn't. I mean, like I had people, we'd talk about, something that was a little harder subject and I'd hear the emotion coming up over the phone and I'm like, okay, I know I'm probably going to get emotion out of that when we talk in person. I need to be prepared for that. I need to let my camera guy know ahead of time, like, maybe be willing to push in a little bit more on this question or something like, I mean, just little odds and ends. And sometimes, when you don't have a camera in front of you, when you're just doing it over the phone, people are a little more open and honest. And so, maybe you'd get an anecdote that you didn't get on camera and you could, rather than just never knowing that because they didn't tell you when your first conversation was on camera, all of a sudden, if they don't tell you that in the interview, you can come back to it with a question like, on the phone, you told me about that time that, he jumped off the roof into the pool and, dunked the basketball on the pool hoop or something like that. Like, can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, what does that tell you about his personality and who he is? Like those kind of things where, and I literally just made that story up on the spot, but it just, those kind of things where you can gain some anecdotal knowledge that maybe will help you as you prep for the real interview, even though, whether that stuff goes in or not, it gives you an idea of, what kind of things you want to touch on and not. And then the other things that I would say I would keep would, and Just the ability to work remote has been incredible. I do think that there's a lot of value in what we do and having that collaborative editing process. And I think there's a lot of value, you know, in seeing your colleagues more often than, you know, never, like the last year was. But, you know, I think just trying to find some balance between that and the way that it's improved a lot of people's lives and work-life balance, to have this kind of flexibility that we've learned in the last year. And, you know, it, rather than flying out to California for one interview, you know, where all of a sudden that becomes a 3-day process for me because I got to, you know, get out there the day before and then do the interview. And then by the time the interview's done, maybe it's too late for me to get a flight back or, you know, something along those lines. All of a sudden that's a, you know, half hour of my time that can be done over Zoom rather than me losing 3 days of productivity. So I think a hybrid model is probably what you're going to see come out of this. And I don't actually know that, you know, I haven't been given direction from above, but I just know that, you know, that's in talking to a lot of people, I think we found a lot of efficiencies, that we can work into our old model and see how they fit together.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.